What is up, my friends? Welcome back to another episode of the Coworking Weekly Show. As always, I'm your host, Alex Hellman, and this week we're sitting down with the guy who is sitting on the other side of the table almost every time I record this show, or at least for the last 9 months. Mike Mihalik has been producing the Coworking Weekly Show, as well as our audiobook, The First 10, which you can go check out, search Google, or we'll have it linked in the show notes. It's been a bunch of months of really exciting work with Mike, bringing him onto the team, not just to take the audio production work off of my plate, but also to help build a process around what we do. He came in as a college intern, finishing up his senior year, has since graduated, and I've gotten to watch evolve as a professional over the last 9 months, both taking the things that he sees at Indy Hall and putting them into his own practice, as well as bringing quite a bit of insight. So this episode was fun to flip things around, actually put Mike in the hot seat, ask him some questions about what it was like to discover Indy Hall as a college student, some of the things that he came in, some preconceived notions, unexpected experiences that he's had, things that he's learned, how he's grown and evolved in, again, 9 months, not a lot of time for somebody to have had the kinds of changes that he has. So listen carefully for the experiences that he's had. If you're looking for ways to help college students, or really honestly anybody who's joining your coworking space, these are the kinds of things that we do every day that can help you help other folks in your community. You're going to be learning about the new habits that he's taken on, as well as some of the things that we have shown him are potential new futures. And at the very end, we had a pretty interesting and frankly, for me, kind of surprising conversation about things that we could be doing as a co-working community to get more involved in college campuses. So give this one a listen all the way through. There's great stuff at every corner, and I hope you enjoy. Thanks, Mike, for taking the time, and we will see you next week. Mike, I think it was November, December or so when you originally emailed me looking for an internship at Indy Hall.
Right.
And I can say candidly to you, because I think I said it in that email, that Indy Hall doesn't take a lot of interns.
Yeah.
We get a good number of requests. And frankly, the big part of the reason that we say no to folks is not because we don't like them or not because we don't like having interns, but because most people, in just simply the way that they're writing to us, are clearly looking for what their idea of a job already is.
Right.
And I remember being struck by your email that it was more to it than, hey, I'm looking for a place where I can get some work for, you know, 3 or just 6 months before I graduate. There was a genuine curiosity from you, and that stood out to me. So for today's show, I kind of wanted to rewind the clock to maybe the days or weeks before you decided to email Indy Hall, and have you sort of introduce yourself to our audience, because they've heard me speak of you sort of inanimately on the microphone, but they don't really know who you are. So you know, let folks know who you are and what was it that led you to email me back in November or so.
Yeah. Well, I was in school still. I was at Temple, and I had actually come up with a business idea. Well, I was in a business class. And our project was to make a business plan. And it was the first one I'd ever, you know, I never actually touched the surface of that or anything. So I was really interested. I was just getting interested in how to do that as an audio engineer. The idea was to make a space that was collaborative and focused around musicians and other audio engineers. And it was kind of just like a jump into something that would be cool that I was already doing with friends and family who were musicians. And my Professor Mooney, he was really into it, and he knew about you guys, so he sent me your contact info. Yeah, it was basically like, he was like, oh, that's a great idea, you should check this out, because they kind of already did it. I was like, oh, okay. And so, yeah, then I emailed you guys, and it kind of was mostly out of curiosity, because I didn't think anything like that existed. So
in that, like, what, before you walked in the door, what did you think you were about to see? What, based on your professor's explanation to you, which may have been as much as you just said to me, looking on the website, like, what was your initial impression? And I'm mostly curious about this is for two reasons. One is, this was brand new to you.
Yeah.
You didn't even know, like, you literally thought something like this couldn't exist and that you would come up with a new idea.
Yeah.
Which, for folks that are listening, and whether you're running a co-working space or thinking about it, you've probably had that moment where you're like, this is a great idea, and then you discover that other people are doing it in and you can learn from them.
Yeah.
So, like, what did you think you were about to experience? What did it look like from the outside?
Initially, I think the thing that caught me was really, like, from my standpoint, was the artwork around the space and on the website and everything. And just seeing, like, it really seemed to me like a hangout. And not to, like, discount what it is, but it really seemed like it was very interesting because I had no idea what was actually happening work-wise. It just seemed like a cool hangout art space. And that's really all I thought of it. Like, I didn't know what to expect. And especially, like, with freelancing and stuff, like, I had just started learning about what that meant to be in, like, a collaborative space to freelance and everything.
Yeah.
So I really just thought it was a hangout.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, so seeing people hanging out and having the recommendation from your professor saying, hey, that thing you want to do, people are kind of doing it, sort of fused those ideas of maybe hanging out is a valuable thing for my career.
Yeah, especially because he said, like, as like the work that's being done, there's a lot of things happening coming out of it. And so to think like a hangout and then see how much is happening from it was really cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's super cool. So I remember you writing in, and we had a little bit of back and forth. And as I tend to do when people write in, and if you've written me, maybe you've experienced this, I start with lots of questions.
Yeah.
And so I started asking you about, what kind of stuff are you interested in? What do you like to do? What kind of projects are you doing? And from my point of view, as someone who's even considering an intern, and granted, this would be the case whether you're an intern, an employee, really anybody, like, I needed to know what you were about. And it was tough to do that. You know, it's tough to do that over email. But I remember you saying a few things that were interesting. You were talking about your interest in music production, mm-hmm. which was cool, and engineering. And the fact that, you know, after graduation, here's the other thing is when students email in about internships, almost all the time they're like, they have a job in mind after graduation.
Yeah.
And one of the things that sort of stood out to me is it still seemed like you were exploring. You're like, yeah. I kind of want to see what's out there. And for me, that's a clue. That's a big signal. I feel like folks that come to Indie Hall and know exactly what they want to get out of it get the least, whether you're an intern or a member, frankly. Members that come here, like, all I want is, whether it's a desk or all I want is a place to network, I'm like, cool, I'm sure you can get that thing, but, like, go in open-minded and keep your eyes open. And like, there's the thing you're looking for is probably here.
Yeah.
As well as other things. So being open-minded from the start is great. And then the one thing that you had said about audio production work made me think, well, wait a second, I've got this podcast that kind of sat on the shelf for a little while because I'd been doing all of the editing work up until that point.
Right.
And Adam and I had gotten started on the First 10, our audiobook as well.
Yeah.
And we'd already recorded a handful of episodes, and I was sort of kind of dreading doing all of the editing myself as well. So, you know, I think I asked you, you know, if you had done any podcast stuff in school.
Yeah. And interestingly enough, we really hadn't. I mean, I had done, like, voicing over for a commercial was, like, a project or
right.
something. But, yeah, there was no, like, podcasting work, which, yeah, was really surprising because that was a big thing. Or it is a big thing, you know what I mean?
Were you listening to podcasts before this?
I wasn't.
Yeah.
No.
Are you now?
I am.
Yeah. Like, what are some of your favorite podcasts now? Besides this one, obviously. This one can't be on the list.
I actually, the first podcast I was listening to when I, like, a little bit before I started was Star Talk Radio with Neil deGrasse Tyson
because yeah.
I'm obsessed with space. So that one I was listening to for a while. And then recently I got into, like, I listened to Marc Maron's podcast, which I like, but I can't help but feel nitpicky about the quality of it. Because, like, it's just like he's just pitching, like, thing. Like, for the first 10 minutes are like pitches for, like, you know, he's sponsored or whatever. But he gets really good people on the show, so
yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
But, I've been listening to that a lot, and I've been listening to Harmontown a lot because that, like...
That's Dan Harmon who did Community, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's hysterical. And
how does that show work?
It's all improv, which is really interesting.
Really?
And it's live, too. So they record live in front of an audience and then make that the podcast.
Wild.
And, yeah, it's a great time. It's, like, it's funny.
Cool. So you're listening to other podcasts and now you have an ear for listening to podcasts. And I'm sure that affects the work that we do here.
Uh-huh.
So we sort of pulled the Coworking Weekly show off the shelf. I was releasing super intermittently and just having somebody that to a degree would take a chunk of the work off of my plate because it took me a better part of a day out of the week to edit an episode and get it ready for folks. And you're able to do it in effectively half the time, which is awesome.
Yeah.
Which is a smart investment to begin with. But also just have somebody to help me figure out how to turn the show into a product, into a process. And then we also had the, again, the audiobook, the first 10.
Yeah.
We were able to do that as well. So you've gotten to touch a bunch of parts of Indy Hall. You've also gotten to connect with like a really all different corners of the work that we do here and get access to more of the underlying ideas that drive Indy Hall. And I'm especially curious about the things that you've learned over the last 9 months or so.
Yeah.
Because I imagine there's things that are on the technical side of things. You've had to like figure out stuff related to the technical process to making this show able to be on the internet for people to listen to.
Yeah.
But also like your own work. You are effectively a freelancer here, which you had never done before. So like, what's it been like for that? And then also just seeing how people work together, like how has that informed other things that you're working on? So I know we can start from the beginning. Like what are some of the things that you've taken away from producing this show in the last 10 months?
There's a lot. It's been actually incredible. From a technical standpoint, it's been awesome just working in Pro Tools and all those. Like, I'm not going to get into that because it's nitty-gritty stuff, but like, that's been incredibly helpful in recording music and like even vocals for music and everything. It's been like awesome.
And some other folks have been reaching out to you for input, advice, potentially overflow work as well. Yeah.
And that's been part of it too. Like being surrounded by people who also are doing music either just like recreationally or trying to record, and like everyone's on the same page, and it's cool because I don't think there's been one time where I'm not like gaining something and giving something with talking about it. So that's been really interesting.
Actually, before you go on, I want to grab that thing you just said, the fact that you're giving and gaining. And I think it's important to I'm thinking back to a time where you and I sat down and you were concerned that you being junior would make it tougher to disconnect. Have you gotten over that to a degree? And like, how is that starting to feel?
I'm definitely like, I feel more able to give. I think that was what my issue was that like I didn't feel that I could give enough, and except for just what we seem to be working on, just because it was in this space. But now, because I'm able to take these things outside of it, it just kind of like inherently becomes easier to give knowledge that's understanding, that's more universal than just like limited to what it is.
So taking what you learned here, you're also doing your own music production, doing vocal work, voiceover work and stuff like that.
Yeah. And that just inherently, those skills I can talk with people and like learn from and everything. So yeah, it's crazy because it really happened naturally. You know, like I didn't foresee that. Like I could logically think that might happen, but I didn't actually.
And I have a hunch that even I probably did tell you and you probably didn't believe me.
Right.
And that happens a lot. It's like there's to a degree that there these kinds of environments for learning, whether it's learning a skill or learning to be more professional at your skill. Like
you're
a great audio engineer on day one, but I know there was a part of like learning how to communicate and you and I having to learn how to be a team as well. So like in that part, what's been a standout to you? Any particular lessons?
Communication, 100% communication. I, in general, just was bad at that, you know, and still am. I mean, I'm still
in what
learning ways?
Like, what do you think maybe was not even visible to you as a problem that you were able to work on?
I think just in understanding, like, you know, not everyone is on your time frame, really. Like, it was kind of, you know, not purposely, but it was definitely kind of like a selfish mentality about like when I can address the problem that you're telling me, you know?
Right.
And that's been with everyone. That's kind of just been a bad habit I've had with like, you know, friends and family too. Like they would hit me up and I would have to get back to them when I'm like in the right mind. You know, it was kind of, I was like, I would listen to it and pay attention to it, but I wouldn't address it until it was like convenient for me. Kind of thing. So, but having learned that now, like me and my brother have been recording music, me and my cousin have been recording music, and that doesn't get done unless we plan like way ahead and like keep on it, because we would make plans and they wouldn't happen because we wouldn't stay communicating.
Yeah.
So
it's interesting for you to frame it that way, because like I think a lot of people think about whether they're hiring a team or building a team or building a community, like defining a group of people isn't enough. Like giving it a time and a place and a space.
Yeah.
To do it consistently and to stick to it and to build that sort of rhythm and to be accountable to the other people. Like all of those things, if they don't exist, all you really do have is a semi-defined group of people, and it's tough to get anything done that way.
Yeah, no, definitely, definitely.
What about the actual ecosystem of Indie Hall? So you had this sort of impression of it early on,
right?
This like summer routine, hanging out and getting work done.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. And I think, and to be fair, that's pretty accurate. But now you've gotten to see it in operation. You've gotten to become more of a part of the sort of operations team as well. So you sit in on our weekly meetings. You get to see members doing things, communicating with each other. You spend as much time as anybody inside my head since we get to do this show together and yeah. the audiobook. So you've gotten like the super high concentrated version of the way we think about things mm-hmm. to get them done here. And I'd love for you to, you know, pick either, you know, a story or an example of something that was surprising to you, like how it happened or that it actually worked, or, you know, a lesson that you learned, something along those lines.
Yeah, I think that whole process with the online conference that you guys were working on, like, especially because I was kind of so outside of that, like I was so new to conferences in general, to see you guys plan that out, like on a big, literally like giant whiteboard, have this like very regimented thing, and then actively pursue like every goal. Like, it sounds obvious, but like really to see that, not just as an individual doing that, but as a team, as a group think type thing, was really cool and impressive, and like made me really consider that events are not easy to do, you know, like especially when a lot of people are involved,
and not if you want to do a good job.
Exactly. I don't think I've ever really had to plan an event that didn't involve like, you know, a case of Yingling and like a fire pit or something, you know.
And
I mean?
Let's be fair, let's like, we don't discount those events, like
yeah.
events don't have to be hard in order for them to be valuable.
Yeah, exactly.
But the when you get to a certain scale and you want to create a certain experience, even a smaller event, like there's things that happen naturally with a fire pit and a case of Yingling, right?
Yeah.
So what happens if you take away the fire pit and the case of Yingling, but you want the same things to happen?
Right.
That's, I think you got to see a glimpse into sort of how we create an experience that gives us what we're looking for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then having that mindset too is like focusing what you are looking for
right.
as the end goal, which was really cool.
Yeah. And so it's down an interesting path about like how we work together as a team. What other sort of activities or examples have you gotten to see here that maybe you'd never seen before, or you were surprised to see, and maybe things you've even adopted into your own work, your own practice, that have helped you?
Well, yeah, what I was saying before one of them being the heartbeat, the fact that we have like a weekly meeting to talk about what we're going to do.
Describe that a little bit.
It's basically just a breakdown of our weekend and then what we're planning to do for the rest of the week. And it's cool because we all are a part of it. It's not just like a listing. It's like we know where they're going to be. We know what their headspace is going to be for the rest of the week and what that means for us and where we can be for them and vice versa.
Yeah.
Which is cool.
Yeah. And among the things, and it's something that we've had to figure out and evolve over time. And you've been here
yeah.
for, I think, the entire evolution of it. We started doing it around the same time, maybe like right before you joined the team.
Oh, really?
And for us, it was, you know, it was very easy for too long to go between us just checking in and saying like, hey, what are you working on?
Yeah.
And as I've learned, in every environment, has nothing to do with co-working. If you don't know what your teammates are working on, you start assuming. And if they start doing things other than what you thought they were working on, you assume that they're doing the wrong thing, when in fact, it's you made the incorrect assumption, right?
Right.
So it's this weird, weird flip around. So just by having this weekly touch point that we make it a point, it's a standing meeting. We try to keep it under an hour as often as – it's almost always under an hour.
Yeah.
And like you said, the other thing we do is – opening with how was your weekend.
Yeah.
So it's a warm up for the week. It's sort of like, you know, if everybody had a good weekend, then
yeah.
we can focus on what we were, you know, what we're celebrating from the weekend. If
totally.
Anybody was like, I just, you know, I had a weird ass weekend and I'm not feeling like I'm on my game, then I can know that like you are still working on getting your head back into the game, and that's cool too.
Yeah.
So having heartbeat as that touch point, I think has helped all of us, since we're working on, and I think you're a great example of someone who works on things that are pretty far outside of what the rest of the team does. Because
yeah.
what you and I are doing is essentially this show, the audiobook, and other sort of side related audio projects.
Yeah, right.
So for the rest of our team to know what Mike is working on, but also for you to know what the rest of the team is working on. And even though you don't get as involved in the daily operations with the rest of the crew, you're still just as much a part of the team, and being able to open that up, having that, again, that door to walk through, plays a big role.
Yeah, no, definitely. And every week there's, you know, there's always something, and I'll write down events that are going to happen and everything, which is cool.
Yeah.
So it's, yeah, it's really good to be aware of everything, basically.
Any other sort of activities or things that have, that you've participated in over the last few months that have had a, had a big impact on you?
Well, I, like, when I first started interning, the show and tells have always, like, captivated me, because I just like that idea of, like, people are doing these cool things, and it's usually, you know, like, you could be aware of it, but it's still their thing that's kind of been private, and now they can, like, show you, and, like, you can take part and learn from it, which I think is really cool.
Yeah.
Especially because they've been really interesting, the ones that I've seen so far, like, the wrestling talk, and like that was like just so unbelievable and such a different perspective that I'd never would have had, you know. And then on, like, as far as like outside things go, I went to Sean's, they had that, it was, they were talking about local Philly art, and it was at Tattooed Moms, and yeah, me and my friend just showed up and went, you know, and it was just this whole crew of people that I never would have seen otherwise. And yeah, it was awesome. It was a good time. And it was like maybe the, I think it was like the second time I'd been there ever. So it was cool to see that through like what we'd been talking about and everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just seeing other communities, obviously, through this community.
Yeah. Yeah. The network of networks effect is pretty powerful.
Yeah.
When we sat down before, you were mentioning about daily goals.
Oh, yeah.
What,
yeah.
What role has daily goals played? And explain a bit about how that works as well.
That's literally just been a mental check for me. That's literally like totally, because I was thinking about this the other day. Like, I'm someone who loves and hates painting by numbers type thing. I love the logic of painting by numbers, but I hate the square roboticness of it at the same time. It's like two sides of the brain. So daily goals for me, it like just keeps me focused, and those goals can be things that are creative. You know,
talk about a little bit about how we actually do daily goals at Indie Hall.
Yeah, so basically on Slack, we'll just list what we have for the day, which is also awesome that it's just a daily thing and not necessarily a giant list. It's just like a small, easy, digestible list. And everyone can see it. It's like, you know, everyone's aware of what everyone's doing. And just, yeah, throughout the day, you check it off and you feel accomplished, and you can segment, you can time manage way better that way. Like when you see what you don't have to do when it's a big project or a small project. Cause I'll use it for everything now. Like it's like micromanaging, even like small projects. I'll just list. And it helps so much. So, but yeah, also being able to see what other people are doing is like pretty interesting.
Yeah. What, like where do you think you're potentially headed now? So we've got, you know, we've got work that you and I are doing together, but having spent now, you know, 10 months or so as a part of Indie Hall working on these projects, what new potential, you know, projects, opportunities, businesses are you still thinking about doing that collaborative space for musicians idea? Have you realized that that's a stupid idea and you don't want to do it? I'm not saying it's a stupid idea, by the way.
Yeah, no, no.
Like now that you see how much work it takes, like
right.
This, yeah. So like, what, you know, what new possibilities? I always think of people that come to Indie Hall, like I said before, who don't know exactly what they're going to get out of it. The more you experience, the more you see new options down the road for you to work towards that maybe you hadn't even considered options. Maybe I'll phrase it that way.
Yeah.
What new options for you exist today that didn't exist 10 months ago? You've graduated, so that's part of it.
Yeah.
But you know, do you have a even slightly clearer picture of what you want to be working on or where you want to be going professionally or what kinds of new things you want to explore more of or you want to answer more questions about?
Yeah, no, definitely. I think, I mean, it's interesting because coming from music production, I had no, it's not that I didn't have interest, I just had no knowledge or awareness of podcasting. And having done this now, like there's been opportunities here that I'm like helping other people make their podcasts. And me and my brother started our own podcast. Like that's just one step, I guess. But that's opened up my mind to the idea that like this medium stretches everywhere and like people want to be heard. And people want to say things. So as like, I'm coming from music world, but like I'm seeing you can say just as much, if not more, with these kind of formats as well.
Yeah.
So yeah, I've been looking around at stuff like that. And as far as like the idea, the collaborative business idea, like it's still just an idea really from my standpoint, but sure. Like I'll talk to people who I know have either like resources or connections or business knowledge, really, and just mull it over and basically just discuss what that would mean to have a space like a, you know, record store, label, musician space type thing.
Yeah.
So it's, and it's interesting because people really like it, it does resonate with people, you know, and like it's helping me kind of like get it out of my comfort zone of being sort of just like solo music dude. Like, it's definitely like very abrasively enlightening for me anyway. But
what do you mean by that, abrasively enlightening?
I mean, like, social anxiety is a very real thing. And so like,
okay, so you'd consider yourself on the introverted side of the spectrum.
Totally. Yeah, 100%. And that's kind of why I joined, though. You know, it's sort of been this like kick in the ass type thing.
Yeah.
And it's been hard, but yeah. Like, it's definitely good. And like it's always surprisingly good, which is crazy.
I want to riff on that just ever so slightly and ask a sort of open-ended question, which is like, if you could pick one or two ways that you think you've changed as a person, as a creative person, as a professional inside of, now again, less than a year, like, mm-hmm. what things have changed the most in you?
I think being goal-oriented and like more, because like, especially when you get out of college, like there's no direction at all for like anything you want to do. And everything you've done doesn't seem as significant, you know what I mean? Because, and I think that's why part of me kind of think that's where social anxiety comes from, is like you create this foundation that is yourself, and then you immerse yourself in a world that is like everything that's you've done is either been done or like discounts it almost sometimes. And so it's just overwhelming, and I've always like felt that way, that it's sort of crushing in a way. But being here and seeing people that like you can do these amazing things and then make them better and everything like that, like it's been cool. But also being able to like have a goal and have some drive towards it has been helpful. And that daily goals and like heartbeat and everything that keeps you focused has been mostly, and communication especially. That's, I think communication has been the biggest improvement that I've like felt personally, which has been cool.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
As we wrap up, I'm curious, and you're in a great spot because you're relatively recently out of school, mm-hmm. and are you still friends that are in school?
Yeah. All my roommates.
When you explain Indie Hall, both the place, this community, the work that you do here, like, do they get it? And maybe I should ask in two parts, like, how do you describe it? And do they, are you still working on getting them to understand it?
Yeah, they have no idea what's going on.
Okay, so like, so how can we fix that? It's like a genuine question.
Cause, yeah.
You know, you stood out from a crowd in the way you reached out to us, and that was your own instinct, intuition, and the fact that you found yourself genuinely curious about this thing that we did made it pretty easy for you to stand out.
And, yeah,
so,
that's cool.
But the fact is you stand out.
Yeah.
So, like, how can we make it so that more college students are even, step two is getting them, helping them stand out. Step one is, how do we help college students even be aware that a place like Indie Hall exists, you know, other than the bit of serendipity of having a professor mention it to them?
Mm-hmm. I think, well, I guess, like, really exactly what it was a resonance with the idea that I had, you know, and, you know, thinking it was original, too, and it totally wasn't. And that just, I mean, maybe that's, like, a creative or an artist perspective, but, like, when you have an idea and someone else is doing it, it's, like, you're inevitably, like, yes, I have to see that. Like,
yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
And I think maybe it's a generational thing, I'm not sure, but I think, like, that when someone who's like in college right now hears something that like they're very into, there's always this sort of like almost like a click thing, which is kind of lame when it's like so niche and they think it's like their own, but mm-hmm. it's honestly like then when it's that connection and they're all together with other like-minded people, that's when it just opens up and becomes less about like an ego-driven thing and more about like a, what is this now? Like, how do I explore this? Yeah. So I think it's mostly just resonating with college students and what they want to do, and in an environment where everyone has the opportunity to do anything that they want to do in that regard, it's easier to make those connections, I feel.
So if there was something in particular, part of my hunch is that we can't wait for college students to come to us. We've kind of got to go where they are, which is probably on campus or to places that they hang out. And the way you're describing, like, people already hang out in groups. Like,
yeah.
are there groups on campus that we could or should reach out to, or groups that are doing things that we could, you know, I don't want to go in and crash parties and, you know, be the, hey, fellow college kids, how hip is today? Like, I don't want to play that game. But, yeah. like, is there, in your mind, you know, is there a certain, you know, in my mind, I feel like the sooner we could reach a student, the better. But is there examples of events or places where people who, like, for me, it also wouldn't be like, it probably wouldn't be me, Adam, Sam, or Sean going to those things. Like, I'd want to be able to invite other members along. So, like, is there something that comes to mind for you in terms of, like, stuff that goes on campus that members of co-working communities could go hang out, go observe, and potentially meet some folks?
I initially thought of, like, the obvious, like, the job fairs and stuff, career fairs. Honestly, I mean, that is a very viable thing because students there, like, their minds are very set on, like, finding a place. Not even just career-oriented, just finding a place to be.
Mm-hmm.
I'd only been to, like, maybe one or two, but, like, that was my mentality, was it was less about, like, the salary and more about, like, finding a place where, you know, the people behind the job fair desk can tell me that I would enjoy it being here. And then the people who are also with me behind, like, in front of the desk are, like, also looking for the same thing.
Interesting. That's, I'm completely candid here. I was not expecting that. What, I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
but I feel like with all of the attention on job, and even the availability of jobs, that's genuinely surprising to me. So when you're in that conversation at a job fair, like, how, like, what stands out to you? Like, what kinds of conversations are going to make you go, I want to follow up with that, or, you know, that's not just another job?
Yeah, I think it's the emphasis on environment. Like, when they're talking to you about, like, what their work environment is like and what the people they work with is like, and not even, like, going over the, you know, logistics of, like, pay or whatever, like, what it looks like in the industry and everything.
So you're talking about environment. That's both, like, the physical place, but also the culture.
Yeah, yeah. Like, if there's ever been, when they start the conversation like that, that's immediately like, all right, these guys have, like, their workspace is more than a workspace. It's, like, something more. And I think, yeah, and I think presenting it to students is literally just that, and saying, like, you're not, because inherently when you talk about Indy Hall, that's what it is. So that's what's going to intrigue people.
Sure.
You know?
Cool. That's some food for thought. All right. This was even more fun than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, that was awesome.
So I appreciate you taking the time, Mike. I appreciate all the work you do on the show. I know our listeners do as well. We just got our latest review that came in over the weekend, mentioned the production value on the show stands out above the rest as well. So
right,
that's cool. A lot of your work as well. So thanks for that.
Right on.
And maybe we'll do another check-in like this down the road when you've learned some new things, you've got some new habits and new processes. And are turning more corners.
Yeah, for sure.
Awesome. Cool. If people want to follow you on the internet, because I know you're a musician, so you've got some music out there, as well as other projects and things like that. Like, when people want to check you out online, where do you send them?
Well, my name on the interwebs everywhere, Cinderblock Hands, man.
I have to ask, is there a story behind that?
My high school art class, I was massively inspired by Cinderblocks, and I made, like, clay sculptures and, like, put them on people's hands. And it was when I got into art. So I've taken that as far as it can go.
No, awesome. I know you've got a SoundCloud account, with some stuff up there. And so I guess people can search Cinderblock Hands Man on the internet, and anywhere you find that, it's most likely going to be Mike.
Yeah.
Awesome, Mike. Yeah. Thanks for all your work. Thanks for this conversation.
Yeah,
super
thank
cool.
Thank you, man. Totally.